On Wednesday, August the 31st, there's an informational community meeting regarding the Dakota Access Pipeline. KIDE's Kristen Marshall has the story.
This is Kristen Marshall, and I have two people in the studio with me today who are here to talk to you about the Dakota Access Pipeline. Can you please introduce yourselves?
I'm Kinson Todd Joseph from here, the Hoopa Valley.
My name is Thomas Joseph. I'm also a Hoopa Valley tribal member.
So tell me, guys, what made you first decide to go over there?
Well, this event has been a long time coming. They're over there fighting for their waters, the same stories that we have over here, always fighting for our waters. So that's basically it. We needed to empower each other and share those stories. And that's what it is a gathering for those prayers for our water.
When I first heard about the controversy with the Dakota Access Pipeline and the call for assistance by the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, I got mixed feelings because of the understanding of the importance of water and the struggles that we have here locally. It made me feel like we needed to step up the pace here and to collaborate and work with our neighboring tribes to see what we can do in the defense of our waterways. But as the days continued on and as nations throughout the country were uniting and joining, I seen it as an obligation and a duty for us to stand in solidarity with the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. And Chairman Jackson came out with his memorandum to ask the membership to aid the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. And in that moment, I felt like it was time to mobilize and to heed to the calling of not only our local chairman, but the calling of the indigenous people across the country to stand up and defend our waterways and our rights to clean water.
What is the actual feeling of being there?
Amazing feeling over there. Like I said, it's the same stories over here, and to have the same conflicts, you know, the same prayers, to be surrounded by that is super powerful. Just being there in those lands, you know, and knowing their history, what they've gone through, you could feel the presence of their ancestors and feel their medicine there, and for everyone else to bring their medicine, you know, along.
On our way over, the waters that we crossed was very intriguing to me. We went up the mighty Klamath River, and when we go into Oregon, we went up the Columbia River, which is a huge water part of the Northwest. And going through Montana and getting into North Dakota, the grass and everything is so green over there, and it's just amazing to see how water is such a strong part and element of their local community as it is ours. And showing up into the overflow camp, we actually traveled into Sacred Stone first.
Thank you. How many encampments are there?
There's three encampments. There's the Sacred Stone encampment, and then the Rosebud Sioux tribe alongside the south end of the Cannonball River, and then what they call the overflow camp, which is on the north end of the Cannonball River. And so we, because the other two camps were full, we trekked into the overflow camp on the north bank of the Cannonball River. And when you wrap around that corner, it's an amazing experience to see so many indigenous people gathered, to see so many indigenous flags being flown throughout the camp. There's longhouses, there's teepees, there's tents. There's people from all across the country that are gathered there. And we would travel into town at least once a day. And coming back into the camp each time, it was a spectacular sight to see such a large encampment of so many indigenous people. And when you come in, the greetings and the welcoming is tremendous. And it really is one camp. It really is one heartbeat. There's not a time during the duration that I was there that there wasn't songs being sang, that there wasn't prayers being prayed, that there wasn't gatherings being done alongside the riverbanks or alongside teepees. The camp is constantly in prayer. One of the things I miss about the camp over there when I left was we were able to, when you go to sleep, you're sung to sleep every night by multiple nations throughout the country. And they don't over, they don't sing over each other. Each camp or each village would take turns. And so it would just echo throughout the camp, different nations singing their prayer songs throughout the night. And I don't even know if those songs ever did end. I would fall to sleep to them. And then when I woke up in the morning, they were still being sung. And so I felt like those songs never did cease, that camp was constantly in prayer.
You guys went over there and you came back. And when you came back with a purpose. What was that purpose when you came back?
More people. We wanted everybody here to experience what we experienced over there, to feel what we feel, you know, and it's super empowering and that's what we need our people to, you know, to feel. To get out of our holes and our trials. And so they need to be there. We need to be there together.
I think my sister nailed it. When the decision came down from the federal courts that they weren't going to have a decision on the federal court case, the feeling inside the camp was a sense of everybody needs to stay. Everybody needs to ground themselves and to focus on the purpose of why we gathered. The leaders of the camp went into the longhouse and had a quite long discussion on how they want to move forward. And when they came out, their decision was to encourage and urge everybody to stay in camp, to collaborate more closely with each other, to build more unity amongst each other, and to anchor down in prayer and in solidarity. When our camp came together, we felt like it was urgent for us to return home and to gather more people to be able to experience the gathering of this magnitude, to be able to experience not only our local Lower Klamath Basin tribes coming together in unity for the protection of waters halfway across the country, but for them to experience the collaboration of multiple nations, even outside the United States. There was representation from Colombia, from Brazil, from Puerto Rico, from Cuba. Many indigenous people came down from Canada. This is a true indigenous gathering that this world has not seen with their eyes. Nobody has seen this with their eyes. An indigenous country will never be the same after this. It's not only a turning point for indigenous nations. I know for a fact that indigenous tribes will forever be changed by this momentous experience in this time. But even more importantly than that, that the country is at a turning point. That if the Standing Rock Sioux Nation is able to win this lawsuit with bodies on the ground, able to win this lawsuit in federal courts, there is no pipeline anywhere in the United States that's going to be able to be laid into our Mother Earth. There is no pipeline that's going to be able to be laid across this nation that does not cross tribal indigenous lands. And it will force our country into rethinking their energy policy. It will force our country to realize that petroleum is not the blood of this nation, and that our Mother Earth is and our waters are. And it's going to force our country to start looking towards solar and looking towards renewable resources that is beneficial to the people and our earth. It's a very big turning point, not just for indigenous nations, but the world in turn.
Right now, you guys are getting ready to go back, and you're taking people with you. I know that you got some funding to help people go, but I know that funding has pretty much been kind of spent out. If someone else wanted to go and they didn't quite know how to get there or how to plan the trip, what is some advice that you would give them, or personal experiences on, you know, what you spent getting over there, or the route you took, things of that nature, how to get there?
Okay. At first, I would like to give gratitude for the leadership of our tribal chairman in making this decision to aid the Standing Rock Sioux tribe. Because of his leadership and his direction, the local federation of PICO, which is called True North Organizing Network, was able to mobilize and assist local leaders to also attend Standing Rock. And because of the relationship that True North has with a international federation called PICO, which is People Improving Community Through Organizing, they are also able to reach up into the national network and receive resources to send the first delegation and this second, much larger delegation over to Standing Rock. On our first trip over, we just knew that we had to get there, so we weren't too concerned about the funds, and a lot of people had to pay out of pocket. I was driving a larger SUV pulling a U-Haul, and when I counted up my receipts, it cost me about $300 to go one direction. So about $580, I believe, was the total there and back. But that's a large SUV pulling a very heavy U-Haul loaded with all kinds of supplies that we gathered for Standing Rock.
If I'm going to go, what should I bring?
There's so much food there. There's so many things being donated on the daily. So really, you just need your bodies. And
I'm guessing probably a sleeping bag.
Sleeping bag. During the day, it gets pretty warm. Can be fairly windy during the day. And the nights get cold. There's lots of spiders. Bug spray, I guess.
What about mosquitoes?
Some shades. Not really too many mosquitoes.
I didn't remember any mosquitoes. Yeah. It's important to keep your tent locked up. You keep your tent locked up, no spiders are getting in.
Right.
But my sister was correct with the amount of food that was there. We took over a fully operational kitchen with the ability to feed hundreds of meals a day. When we went over there and set our kitchen up, we were asked to be a host kitchen because of the numerous amount of people that needed to be fed. And we knew that we would run out of the supplies that we took soon, but they said, don't worry about supplies. And every day people would come by our camp and donate pounds and pounds of buffalo meat or anything that your kitchen may need. I know that they stocked we ended up leaving our kitchen there because we didn't see that it was viable for us to return back to Hoopa and bring our kitchen with us when it was needed there so desperately. So we left a fully operational kitchen there along with local tribal members to operate that kitchen. And they're currently over there operating the kitchen every day. And the kitchen is supplied by the donations that are coming across the nation. And so I wouldn't worry about food. I would just worry about getting there.
And when people go there, is there a specific date or a goal that you want people, that they want people there for? I've heard something about September 9th.
September 9th is the federal court hearing that's supposed to be held in Washington, D.C. This is a very important time to be on the ground in Standing Rock. This will be the day that the federal judge decides to allow the access pipeline to cross the Army Corps of Engineers land or to deny that access. I also know through working with True North that there is statewide actions being held at local courthouses, on waterways of bridges, on bays. And so if people aren't able to attend Standing Rock before the 9th, it would be very important for them to also be in relationship with their community to find out where those gathering points are, those rallies, so that they can also show their solidarity across the nation in this moment.
If they want to go to a local rally point, I'm guessing they would talk to somebody in their tribal office, or is there a place that they can go?
The True North Organizing Network can be found on Facebook. It can also be found at truenorthorganizing.org on the internet. But I'm also expecting them to have media releases as well as communications directly with local tribes on where those rallying points will be.
Is there anything else that you feel is very important that people know?
I just think it's very important for our people to be there and represent California, you know, and Hoopa, and these other river tribes play a big role in the leadership in California, and California is a huge leader in politics in the whole nation. So, you know, we have a big say at what happens here, and we're a lot different than a lot of other natives, you know, and I think that if we represent ourselves well, you know, that we can we could rally up some peeps and really make a difference.
All right, thank you guys so much for taking time out of your a day to just come in here. I know it's pretty late at night, and you guys agreed to come into the studio to record again. My name is Kristen Marshall, and I am here with
Thomas Joseph.
And Kinston Todd Joseph.
And we want you to be informed.
Opinions expressed were those of the speaker and not necessarily those of KIDE or the Hoopa Valley Tribal Council. Thank you for listening.